On today's episode of Hoops 360, the hottest headlines coming out of the WNBA's opening weekend, Caitlin Clark's return, what is going on with AZ Fudd, plus how officiating is hopefully making a change for the better, even though we might be experiencing some growing pains. All of that plus so much more on today's edition of Hoops 360. What is up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. The WNBA season is back. We had teams tip off their season openers, and for some, their franchise openers. So we will get into the Wings and the Fever matchup, everything that Cass saw with her boots on the ground, plus all of our major takeaways from the first weekend of action. Did the Aces redeem themselves after a pretty brutal home opener on ring night? Plus, we knew officiating was going to be a topic of conversation this season. How did that play out in the opening weekend of the season? All of that, plus so much more. So let's kick things off with one of the more anticipated matchups, I would say in a long time, in the WNBA. The last four number one overall picks. We had Paige Bueckers and AZ Fudd taking on Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark, the Indiana Fever, the Dallas Wings. Cass, you were there. You were there for this game. Give us the whole breakdown, just the vibe, the feeling in the arena, in the city. How's your trip?
Yeah, it was a good trip. It's always a good trip to Indiana. I'm a broken record at this point, but it's always impressive. It kind of feels like a small town. They take their sports seriously. So there's Fever stuff everywhere. Morning of the game, I was checking out of my hotel. They all have their Fever gear on, all very excited. Once you got into the arena, though, there were a lot of Dallas fans. There were a lot of Paige Bueckers fans. Kind of feel the electricity of a season starting. I think throughout the game, there maybe wasn't that electric atmosphere that usually is there. We're going to get into the Caitlin Clark of it all, but she said herself she was a couple of buckets away from maybe having a great game and helping her team win. I think she was a couple of buckets away from really keeping that crowd on a string like she usually does. But it was a fun game. A lot of offense, a lot of fouls. Fun way to start the season, though.
A lot of offense. Wings win this one 107 to 104.
First 105-1.
That's insane. And in a way, you know, I hear you on the maybe the in the arena atmosphere wasn't quite as like as much or as great as the buildup. And maybe we didn't see the same kind of crazy theatrics from the logo three from Caitlin Clark that we're accustomed to seeing. But just in, you know, at the box score alone and final score alone, that game delivered. I mean, we've had a lot of hyped up matchups in the W recently. I look at, you know, the Fever Sky matchup from last year. Everyone was hyping up this whole like Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese facing off again in the WNBA. And that game was a total dud. This one, at least, delivered in kind of the in the final score in what we saw. We saw Paige Bueckers absolutely go off in this one. 20 points, 8 of 10 from the field. Odyssey Sims also showed up. Arike Ogunbowale was massive in this one as well, a player that came into the season, I think, with a lot of question marks about how she really kind of fit in into the calculus, into the ecosystem of the Dallas Wings. Were her and Paige going to be able to be kind of a cohesive unit together? And those were fair questions based off of last season's results. But at least early on, we're seeing that that matchup go well.
Yeah, and it'll be a matchup that's going to be here for a while. I think that's the exciting part. You know, you take those four number one picks, they're signed through at minimum, I think it was 2028 with Paige's contract, and we'll see how that pans out with the Dallas Stars. But at least on the Indiana side, like AB Aaliyah Boston signed an extension there, became the richest contract with that back end money. Like Caitlin was extended for her fourth year option. She's almost certainly going to stay in Indiana for a while. She seems very happy there. So this is going to your point, like this is going to, I think, develop into a situation where they have to go through each other if they want to win in the future. And we've seen this in the past too. So it was a really, really good starting point for all of them. I think in terms of atmosphere, I don't want to make it seem like it was not a good atmosphere. It was. Jose Fernandez, I think, had a great quote post game. He was asked about it and he said, you know, I coached in college for a while. Those, you could walk into hostile atmospheres there. this wasn't hostile. Like, these are basketball fans. It was electric. I think the standard in Indiana is just so high. And maybe there was a little uncertainty about what it does look like when Caitlin Clark is back, and if she really is back, which maybe there's a few lingering questions about that.
I do want to get into that. You know, Caitlin Clark on the night, 20 points, 7 of 18 from the field, 2 of 9 from 3. I mean, 23 points is not something that you're just going to scoff at, but that's definitely not one of those gaudy stat lines that maybe we're accustomed to seeing from Caitlin Clark. And that we did see Caitlin Clark, you know, come off the floor on the bench, come back, went back on the bench. And then we heard some back issue cited, which, look, we know that Caitlin Clark has been dealing with some of those soft tissue injuries, the groin injuries that have kind of been plaguing her or were plaguing her last season. It was so great to finally see Caitlin Clark back out there in a Fever uniform, getting her first valuable minutes in almost a calendar year. But Cass, what's the concern level in Indiana, or concern level for you about yet another thing, that a back issue that we haven't heard about from about Caitlin?
We hadn't heard about it. It's one game. She didn't leave the game. Steph White was pretty blunt, saying, you know, if something were wrong, we wouldn't have played her 30 minutes. And we can look back at last year and acknowledge that when there were things wrong, when they weren't really sure that she was healthy, they held her back. So I have every reason to believe in Steph White. These things are sometimes connected. And Steph White doubled down again this week in practice and said, like, there's such a microscope and attention on Caitlin that anything that happens is scrutiny, is considered. And so if, you know, what Steph White said was like, this is going to be a thing for her, but also for some of our other players. And she talked about how there's just more staff now, more medical staff who can help these players in game do something a little different. She compared it on game day to the NFL blue tent, where, you know, you go and you get retaped or whatever. Like, these things are going to happen. I think one game, I'm not going to look into it too deeply. In terms of Caitlin Clark and her play on the court, I thought coming out in that third quarter, it felt so vintage Caitlin. And you could see it felt like that fist pump at half court was just her, like, release. She talked a lot about the emotion of getting back into a jersey. She's been waiting for this day. She had that, like, filthy behind the back pass in the paint. That stretch was what Caitlin could be. I thought there were some other maybe not as great moments for her, certainly defensively, which is not just her, the entire team, and a lot of teams around the league are dealing with that. So I'll see in the coming days, in the coming games, but I'm not going to be overly concerned. I feel like that's just worrying about nothing.
I feel like we do this. This has been such a hyped up season. And obviously Caitlin Clark's return has been long awaited by the basketball world, the sports world. That now that we have one teeny tiny data point of actual basketball that we were able to watch and to analyze, we're overanalyzing it. And I think we have a tendency to do that across the entirety of the league now that we're only, only have 1 week under our belts. You know, I was just having a conversation with somebody earlier today, and they were referencing the Liberty-Portland game last night. We're recording this podcast on Wednesday, so we haven't seen Fever Sparks. We'll preview that game here in just a moment. That game happens tonight. But they were referencing the Portland-New York game. Like, Portland, buzzer-beater win, huge win, such an exciting win for a new franchise. But this person asked me, like, do you think New York is concerned? Have they fallen off? And I was like, wait, what? It's May 13th. It is one game. Sabrina's hurt. Satu's hurt. Like, everything is new. There's so much newness, especially in the season coming off of a free agency period where everyone in the league was a free agent. So let this just be a little, heed this call and heed this warning. It is so early. And I think we should have expected a Caitlin Clark ramping up period. And if your ramping up period comes in the form of a 23-point night, like, you'll take it. Caitlin has not been out on the court and has not been playing valuable minutes since, what, July? It's been 10 months.
Well, in the W, yeah. But she did have, yeah, in the W, which obviously is a different beast. But I think that almost plays into your point a little bit, too. Like, she played the entire FIBA qualifying tournament. And I didn't pay attention to every single second of that tournament, right. But I don't know, maybe she talked to medical staff then too, or what have you, and she won MVP. So like you said, not overly concerned.
Not overly concerned, but I do think if we want to, after I just said don't overreact based off of just one
game.
Let's overreact based off of just one game. The Fever are going to be fine. Caitlin Clark is going to be fine. And it was a fun opening night. Somebody had to lose that game. We were going to overanalyze a loss no matter what. But we did see a great night from Paige. We did see a great night from this Dallas Wings team. So you have the positive side of that, of all of the talk that we've done in the offseason, of the improvement, not all offseason, but, you know, post-CBA, the improvements and the additions that Dallas made on this roster, bringing Jose Fernandez in, drafting EZ Fudd, Paige Becker's coming into year two, you know, the obvious work she had done in the weight room this past offseason gave us all hope and optimism for, you know, what could come for this Wings team. And we talked a lot about how they could be one of the most, if not the most improved team in the WNBA this season. Night one, or I guess technically night two, game one was and gave us plenty of reason to feel really, you know, confident in that take. And then fast forward to game two, we did see reports that AZ Fudd would not be playing, and Jose Fernandez did cite a knee issue there. So, I mean, again, it's so early, and we don't overreact based off of, you know, just a couple of games and a couple of games. But your thoughts overall on the early AZ Fudd experience that we have, considering she was not available for game two, and in game one, she had 3 points and kind of largely was a no-show.
It's a really tough situation to be in, I think. She had that corner three in game one. We'll focus on game one first. She had that corner three, which was nice to see. I thought there were some moments that maybe she should have taken a shot and instead passed it up. You know, maybe she's just working in the system, finding the best shot. I thought she played some decent defense, and that's really probably where she got her 18 minutes. But for AZ Fudd, like, for everyone critiquing, let's talk game one, critiquing that she came off the bench, like, it's not all that uncommon. You know, Kelsey Plum came off the bench to start her career. A few other players over the years. Jackie Young, she started her rookie year, but came off the bench the next year. Jewel Lloyd started her first two games, sat the bench for 11. Like, it's not all that uncommon. And if you're the Dallas Wings, like, who else would you have drafted who started these first games anyways? You know, Olivia Miles? Probably not, because Odyssey Sims is where they want to go. And like you said, Odyssey Sims played a good game. She was with the Fever last year. She said that had nothing to do with it. Kind of felt a little like it did.
And it's okay if it did.
It's okay. It's fine.
Whatever, like, motivates you. It's
totally fine. She hit a few early threes with Caitlin chasing, so kudos to that. But, you know, like, if you're the Wings, there's no one else I think that you plug in. Now, if we're looking at game two and this sudden injury, no one has a lot of information on it. The Dallas Morning News reports that it is that right knee that she had two ACL surgeries on within her lifetime. Like, now I think there's more concern. There's more questions. There's a little bit what's going on. Jose Fernandez said he won't comment on medical, which it is his prerogative, I guess, but sure creates a vacuum for a lot of confusion. I'll be interested to see if she comes off the injury report and if she does see any playing time. I mean, Jose Fernandez did not even seem willing to speak about how she was practicing, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think that when you're a coach, you have an incredibly difficult job of walking that line between protecting your team and protecting your player from, you know, themselves, from, you know, from whatever, and then protecting them from speculation. I understand Jose Fernandez does not need to necessarily open up the entire medical history of AZ Fudd, right, and say that when she was 12, she had the chickenpox. Like, no, we don't need to do that. But also, whenever you don't answer questions with at least a little bit of detail, with at least a little bit of, you know, finality or just clarification, then that's our job as people who cover the sport and people who are the liaison between the fan and the team that leaves room for speculation of, is AZ's knee going to be an issue moving forward for the rest of her career? Did the Wings make the wrong decision in drafting somebody who, like you said, has a history of knee injury? Mm-hmm. You start to open up all of these questions that maybe easily could have just been totally and completely kiboshed by Jose Fernandez. And I hate for AZ, for her sake, and for this team's sake, that her entirety of her WNBA career has basically been surrounded by big-time question marks with the way that the team has handled the media.
Yeah, that's fair. That's it's an interesting topic that I think you could expand to the entire league. But yeah, that is, it has chased AZ so far in the past 1 month.
Poor girl. I will say, though, if you are a Dallas Wings fan, the AZ story is not going anywhere. And until we get clarification, there will be a lot of speculation, maybe uncomfortable speculation. But I think that will be your thorn. But the rose of it all is going to be the way that Enrique played, the way that Paige and Enrique played together, and the way that this team feels like, although it hasn't been flawless early on, right? They took that game 2 loss to the Atlanta Dream. Paige followed up that explosive night against the Fever with, you know, a 15.5 from 12 night. Not Paige's greatest night, but I think just in 2 games and a 2-game sample size, you've seen enough to be incredibly optimistic, and you've also seen enough to say, hey, this is still a young team that's still learning each other, and there's going to be some growing pains. But happy to have you back, Cass. I'm glad it was a good trip. I was jealous. It looked like a blast. All right, we will continue on with the rest of our week 1 takeaways. But first, we're not just a basketball show. We are a soccer company as well. And the all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em that's here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. You can make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. Play solo, create a private group with friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccer pick'em. Moving along here with some of our other week 1 takeaways. I can't believe we've gotten, 20 minutes into the podcast and we haven't mentioned the Vegas Aces. I'm trying to get back into the good graces of Aces fans out there. So we will not go any further without mentioning the reigning champions.
Are we just going to skip game 1 then?
No.
We're back.
So if you're an Aces fan, mute it for like the next couple of minutes and then jump back in whenever we start saying nice things about your team again.
We'll give you a thumbs up.
Ring night. Season opener, home opener, the Aces debuted their 2-1 rings, like the big fat championship ring, and then the cutie little smaller ring. I loved it, by the way. I loved the rings. That's about where it ended in terms of good things for the Vegas Aces on the season opener. They drop their game 1 to the Phoenix Mercury 99-66. I mean, not the best night, obviously, for the Vegas Aces. It feels like 19 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists for Asia Wilson is like equivalent to like 2 points for everyone else. It feels like anytime Asia Wilson falls short of that double-double mark, it just feels like a very, unimpressive evening for Asia, because that's just what we've come to expect from her. But look, Cass, we saw the Aces drop that game, 66 points. I mean, that's sounds like a halftime score for times for the Aces, but then they bounce back and they absolutely clobber the Sparks 105-78. I view it as ring night's emotional. They went into that game excited about the ring, excited about welcoming fans back to Vegas. Phoenix came into this game like, you're not going to embarrass us again. We've been thinking about, the WNBA finals. Of course, it was a WNBA finals rematch. You've been thinking about the finals. Been thinking about Asia Wilson's shot over, Tawana Bonner and Alyssa Thomas for the last 7, 8, 9 months, however many months ago that was. Math is hard. I don't read too much into that night 1 loss for the Vegas Aces. I think they're probably more what they were against the Sparks than what they were against the Mercury.
Yeah, long term, I think you're absolutely right. And I think Becky Hammon, it's funny, like we just got done talking about the Wings and the Fever, but sometimes when you're a reporter, something will catch in the pregame and you're like, huh, I'm going to bookmark that because I might need it. Steph White had said, you know, we can't get into a shootout with Dallas. They get into a shootout, they lose. Becky Hammond says they've been pissed off, the Mercury, since that finals loss. Clearly. Sure enough, Mercury basically tied the game up, it seemed like, by the third quarter. I do think they're probably more like the Sparks, but just like every other team, like, they're kind of figuring out new pieces of their chemistry. They're getting back together for the first time. They're figuring out the new foul calls. Also, like, again, not to get in the bad graces of Aces fans here, I don't think we should forget. We're just going to stay there. Like, we're never getting out at this point. I think when it comes to the Aces, though, like, we shouldn't forget that the first half of last year was not good. Like, we're on record saying they were not a good team. They were not playing well at all. They needed a historic streak to make the playoffs as a top seed. And then they got out of the first round and the semifinals in full series in very close games. And I'm not taking anything away from them. But to come off that season, like, I think we remember them being insanely dominant last year when that wasn't the case. And so we shouldn't necessarily expect that now.
I mean, they were right at 500, if not hovering just below 500 until late June.
July.
I mean, they had that late, however many game win streak, 11, 12, 13 game win streak toward the end of the season.
Like, and that's 16, really, yeah.
It's 16. Like, they catapulted them into contention. And to your point, they did struggle against the skeleton crew of the Indiana Fever. Let's not forget, the Indiana Fever were one game away from punching their ticket to the WNBA Finals. Now, great teams find ways to win basketball games. And that's what the Aces did. And they won the last one of the season. And that's the only one that matters. Let's not forget Becky Hammond last season. We talked about it so many times here on this podcast, how she gave a verbal kick in the butt to her team at least twice, if not three times last season, about how they're not giving enough effort, about how disappointed she was in this team. Now, I'm not going to say that that's going to replicate itself, and I'm not going to say that we can expect the Aces to start their season the same way they did last year, but I think it is a good reminder, a positive reminder to Aces fans of whatever bad you may have seen in that first game is probably not indicative of what they are. And I think one big reason for that is, one, you have the best player on the planet in Asia Wilson, four-time MVP, could be, again, five-time MVP this season. And then you also bring back so many key pieces of those championship squads. Vegas has something that I think is hard to come by, especially coming off of the odd and strange offseason that was this past year in the WNBA, and that's continuity. I don't think there should be any concerns in Vegas.
No, they have the continuity and the chemistry that comes from it to figure it out. And I think the players have kind of talked about that after that Sparks win, but that's what you can fall back on when things aren't working, when the defense isn't stepping up, and defense has been a little bit of a problem. Like, overreaction. We shouldn't overreact that the Aces are bad.
Don't let anybody clip that off.
They're going to clip it into pieces.
They're going to clip it and they're going to put it out there, and then you're going to have to delete your Twitter and you're going to have to change your name. I do also think, too, especially so early on in the season, you can find good in losses and bad in wins. And I think a good example of that and finding the good in losses is the Washington Mystics. A 98-93 overtime loss to the New York Liberty. And we are talking about a Washington Mystics team whose average age is, I don't know what it is, if I had to guess, 22. I mean, like, the Mystics are like, it's all rookies. Kiki Aryafin in year two, Sonia Citron in year two, Georgia Amor in year one, Angela Dugalich and Lauren Betts coming off of the bench all in year one, Rory Harmon off the bench in year one. This is such a young Mystics team taking on, albeit banged up and injured, but veteran Liberty squad with a championship upside, and the Mystics took them to OT. You know, when you're a young team, getting that kind of experience, crunch time experience, playing veterans, all of that is going to make them so much of a better unit in July and August than they are right now. So I was wildly impressed from the grit and the fight that I saw from the Mystics.
They were fun to watch, especially in that Toronto game, even though I know it wasn't like heralded as the best game. Like watching Washington can be a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed seeing Georgia Amor back out there. She's so bouncy. She can be just like so crafty. Like you said, they have so many young players that I think for a lot of fans is very reminiscent of college. Like it feels like, wait, wasn't I just kind of watching some of these matchups? They have so many potential young stars. I think you've said it a lot and maybe you've said it about this team, but they kind of feel like they're playing with house money. Like what can they get done as they build for the future with all of this incredibly young talent that, to the point we just made about the Aces, if they stay together, are going to continue to build continuity and chemistry so that they can fall back on that when they do end up playing, you know, the Liberty next year or the year after in a tight game like this with more at stake.
And you're already starting to see that. You know, Kiki Arya-Finnan-Sonia-Citron now in year two together.
Sonia Citron's so good.
Those two are such a dynamic
duo. I'm like, are you 30 years old? Like, so good. They are, yes.
It felt like Sonia Citron, even last year in her rookie year, you know, like there are some players that you watch early in their careers and you're like, they just get it. Mm-hmm. Like Paige Beckers in her rookie season, albeit a bad year for the Wings, you watch Paige Beckers and you're like, she's ready for this. Like she is ready for the W. This is not too early for her. This is not too much for her. Like she just gets it. Sonia Citron just gets it. And her, like being the kind of leader of the squad, her and Kiki Arya-Finn, they're so complementary of each other. And even if that doesn't come to fruition in, you know, a postseason berth for Washington this year, I think that success for Washington this year is you see growth from players as individuals and you start to see more and more cohesion for this young squad. They're one of my favorite teams early to watch this season and will continue to be throughout the rest of the season. The LA Sparks were a team that we talked a lot about in our preview pod. And, of course, you can find that if you want to find our preseason predictions and all of those fun things. You can find them on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and on the Hoops 360 podcast platform, wherever you get your platform – wherever you get your podcast, rather. And the Sparks just kind of look like their issues and what plagued them last season is just continuing to plague them this season. And that's their defense. We mentioned it, giving up over 100 points to the Vegas Aces, albeit a pissed off Aces team, but, you know, 100 points nonetheless in that second game. And we did hear in that post-game press conference, you know, some of these players get lit a fire underneath them, so to speak. So let's hear what they had to say in a post-game press conference there in L.A.
We need Cam to produce. We need Cam to bring that defensive energy. We have so much confidence and belief in her. She's got to get out on the floor with some confidence and do what she's capable of doing. But we're going to need her. Part of the beginning of the season, too, is figuring out rotations and chemistry and all the things. We looked like we didn't have a lot of floor chemistry out there. Vegas did. They've also played together for years, right? That's not an excuse, but it's just a reality. So we're going to need Cam. She's going to be a big part of our success. Have every bit of belief in her.
There you go. That was Sparks head coach Lynn Roberts on Cameron Brink. She said, I mean, we need Cam to produce. We need Cam to bring that defensive energy. I think that anybody watching these Sparks games would probably say the same thing. But Cass, I don't think that it's on accident that we hear Lynn Roberts singling out Cameron Brink there.
No, I don't think so either. I think you call out players in a way that gets them going and makes them know in a public avenue that you do need more from them. You know, you picked Cam Brink as your potential sixth player of the year for a reason, and for a good one too. Like she needs to be that for this team. She's no longer, you know, slow ramping up from an injury. It's kind of year two for her after that ACL. So she's healthy. She came off a healthy off season. She has to come in, you know, with a more veteran presence and understanding of what she needs to do. They need her. They need her to rim protect. They need to play defense. If they are not, I'd say, top half of the league in defense, they do not have a shot at the playoffs. We saw that last year, right? Like, and Stepway said it. You can't just like outshoot these teams. The teams in the W are too good. I will give the Los Angeles team like a little bit of an out here. As you said, playing the Aces to start your season, not going to be the best time. Playing the Aces, who just the day before were absolutely smacked by the Mercury in what is an embarrassing loss for them. Like, not going to be a good time. So maybe we see more from them moving forward. But Cam Brink has to stay in the game. First of all, she can't foul out. She has to be a good rim protector. And she needs to be, you know, that sixth player off the bench for LA to have a good season.
And it doesn't get any easier. The Sparks host the Fever tonight. But, and look, sometimes you just don't get schedule luck fall your way. Mm-hmm. And yes, if you start the season 0-2, is it the end of the world? Of course not. It is a long season and it's incredibly early in the season. But you're also getting these games at home. You get the privilege of being in the comfy mm-hmm. confines of your own arena and in your own, you know, time zone. Yeah. So I think that you want to start seeing kind of these pieces fitting together for a Sparks team that, although we didn't call them a championship contending team, because in order for us to believe it, kind of had to see it. But it was a team that we thought at least could have an incredibly high ceiling if all of these things kind of came together. And we haven't seen those things come together quite yet.
Overreaction.
Everybody calm down. Everybody. Calm down. But we have seen the Toronto Tempo and the Portland Fire, welcome to the W.
Yes.
Early impressions of these two expansion teams. And let's state for the record, going into this, we mentioned house money earlier, going into the season, mm-hmm. just playing with house money, just getting your, you know, your feet underneath you and establishing yourself as a brand and as a pillar of the community. But just early impressions of those two teams.
Yeah, I liked watching Toronto in that opener. Another game of, you know, this is going to be a fun team to watch. What can they turn into? We would be remiss if we didn't mention the atmosphere there. I know Sandy Brondello did an in-game interview, or maybe was asked post-game. She said, like, she was impressed at how many people were already in Tempo gear that was not, like, that opening night t-shirt. Very cool for Canada. I think a little bit north of 1 million viewership in that country, which I saw is the equivalent of 1 in 42 people in Canada watched that game on Friday night. So exciting moment for Canada. Kathy Engelbert was there. Some WNBA people were there. I know you, though, want to talk about Portland, because what an incredible way to start your franchise on your home court with that type of win against the Liberty last night.
And I mentioned a couple of times, important to point out, the Liberty are shorthanded and banged up, but mm-hmm. it is still a Liberty team nonetheless that has an MVP contending player in Brianna Stewart, a Liberty team that still has, you know, championship expectations. And even without Sabrina Ionescu and Satu Sable, still is a team with a lot of firepower and a lot of veterans in this league. I mean, just Brianna Stewart and Jonquel Jones alone is enough to, you know, win in any sort of heavyweight fight. So I think for Portland to, as you said, not even just opening their, you know, reopening themselves as a franchise, not even just welcoming their fans for the first time into their arena, but beating a team like the Liberty is such a massive statement. Now, I don't think that, at least based from what we've seen right now on two-game sample size, I don't think that Portland is going to be a championship-contending team. I don't think that Portland is going to be any sort of world beaters. But what a great way to galvanize your team and to galvanize your fan base and to get that belief early that if we can beat them, we can beat anybody.
Can you imagine being someone who's like, oh, the WNBA is in Portland, whatever, I'll buy a ticket, I go to this game. And you see that game winner at the buzzer by Sarah Ashley Barker. Like, the video of it, it just zoned out, like, all of the microphones. Like, it was, like, static in your ear if you had a headphone on. That's amazing. Like, what a way to reintroduce your fans to elite basketball. Like, that is the takeaway that I have from that. Like, what a gift to the fans who've waited so long and are so in love with women's sports there.
Portland is one of the great, if not the greatest, women's sports cities in the country. I mean, Portland has long deserved a WNBA franchise. So it's so great for the fans and for the city. And watching watching when it happened, when it all went down, Sarah Ashley Barker just falls to the floor on her knees. And you can tell she's crying and her whole team is coming around her, like patting her on the back, giving her hugs. The whole place is going crazy. Like, these are the kinds of things that grow you know, your brand and your team locally. But I think it also grows the games. Like, those moments, those just human moments, buzzer beater moments, are the things that kids everywhere dream of when they're playing backyard basketball. So a very, very special moment that I think will be on the highlight reels for Portland Fire, you know, for the Portland Fire as a franchise for a long, long time to come. So I'm happy. You know, the Liberty, they're going to be fine. But for the Portland Fire, I'm happy that they got a moment like that.
They're going to get a rematch on Thursday.
Uh-oh. They go to New York, right?
Let me click back on my thing. Oops,
I have a bone to pick with WNBA.
No, it's still in Portland. Okay, go. Do your bone, because there's a few issues this week.
Why is that we get the matchup twice in a week, but we don't get Wings Fever again until August?
Ooh, good question. I'm sure the answer is going to be scheduling is really difficult.
And I get it. Like, I'm sure it is. Managing my own schedule as one individual human is hard enough. I can only imagine the entire league. But also, like, what? Like, you – Wings Fever, I just had it pulled up. Wings Fever drew 2.5 million viewers, the second most watched WNBA game in league history, first of all.
On ESPN,
yeah. Let's go. What a great opening night. We knew it was going to be huge, and it was, and it delivered, and yay, that's amazing. And we don't get it until August. Give the people what they want.
Well, you don't want to overdose.
I know, but we could have it more than just 4 months apart.
I know. I agree. While we're on the subject of scheduling, one thing that came up in the media corps, the Fever are flying out to LA for a single game, and then they're coming back home for another game. Yeah.
Like, just do a tough West Coast road trip.
Exactly. Tough. The Liberty are playing, I don't even know how many games and how many days to start their season. So that's tough.
They're three games in.
They're gonna have a fourth game on Thursday. So you figure the first week they already have four games.
Especially a team that got, you know, ultra screwed last year by the scheduling.
No one's ever happy about the scheduling, much like Asia Wilson speaking about how she doesn't want the ring ceremony like on opening night, like then have the team move it to a different night. I don't know. Do a one off. Do a special. I don't know. There's always something.
I don't want to hear it about the ring ceremony. Okay. It's like, I think I've used this analogy before of like my super sweet 16 when the girl's like, oh, but my custom Range Rover's purple, not pink. I'm like, Asia, okay, you get your ring ceremony when you get it, okay? You've now had three opportunities to have a ring ceremony when you wanted it, okay? Beggars can't be choosers. officiating has also been a point of contention amongst media corps, fans, and even amongst players and coaches themselves. Brianna Stewart is one player who did not hold back on officiating. This is what she had to say in the Liberty home openers post-game press conference.
In the third quarter, it seemed like that physicality really picked up.
You could say that, yes.
And especially with the narratives this season about how the officials are trying to adjust and, you know, making sure that calls are made, I guess, what did you think of how it was called, and how much is this going to be, I guess, a period of growth for all the players and the coaches?
I don't really know what I think about it. I think that in that third quarter especially, like, it was extremely physical, where, like, things weren't getting called, you know what I mean? Or it was hard to balance, because it was, like, physical, non-call, or like ticky-tack call. So, like, we were just trying to figure out where we were on this spectrum. And I think it's hard for the refs, too, like, to figure out the flow of the game. And we just don't want it to be, like, so, like, herky-jerky, you know? So I don't know. We just keep trying to figure it out.
58 total fouls in that game, 53 total fouls in the Fever's matchup against the Dallas Wings. Let's hear from Coach Stephanie White about officiating in that game.
Like I told them, like I told Alana Smith when we were standing on the sideline having a conversation, this is what we want, right? Like we need to overcorrect, so to speak, for lack of a better term, so that we have freedom of movement. So it's a free-flowing offense. So there, we have asked in all of our offseason, have asked the officials to call everything. You know, the challenge and the question sometimes is it consistent? So that'd be the next growth phase and growth area. But this is what we need to clean up some of the stuff that we saw last year. So there is going to be frustration early, but it's necessary.
So we knew that this past off season, Kathy Engelbert brought in the officiating task force, that everybody, you know, wanted to be on the same page in terms of consistency of officiating. We knew that that the WNBA wanted to be stricter for, you know, game flow. It didn't want to be such a physical game, that officiating has been a massive sticking point in the league. And Cass, it sounds like here we're seeing it play out in real time and we're hearing the frustrations from Stephanie White and Brianna Stewart, and they're not the only ones who have expressed this, some growing pains when it comes to some tweaks in officiating.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was frustration from Steph White. You know, it didn't seem that way in the room. She quite frankly said, this is what we want. And she told her team that. And she had a little chit chat with Alana Smith, just kind of like on the sideline. And I agree with Steph. You know, she was very outspoken last year. It got too physical. It was not a fun time to watch. You know, she had a scuffle. Sure, her team had a scuffle with the Sun. We saw how the Lynx season ended. Like, something had to change, and change always comes with growing pain. I understand the claims out there right now that, like, oh, the league has overcorrected, it's gone too far, but you need to start calling everything. And kind of like Steph said, like, find your spots, get consistent. You know, there's a point of emphasis on freedom of movement. And Sandy Brondello, you know, said the other day, like, she was a part of that task force. She wants to clean up the physicality and the freedom of movement. She said, I think they're probably overcalling a little bit now, you know, ticky-tacky. So they just need to get a balance. This isn't going to happen immediately, especially when you think about the fact that preseason is only three games for each team. I think it will clean up. I do also want to point out Sophie Cunningham. She spoke about this before the season on her podcast. One of the things she said that we all know from every sport ever, there's always a point of emphasis to start and then maybe it slacks off. And we've seen this in the W. You get to the playoffs, it's over physical. I think that will be the key. If we are talking about better officiating at All-Star, they have done a good job. If we are still having this conversation about ticky-tacky calls, overcalling it, et cetera, then I think every entity involved, there is a problem somewhere, because players are going to learn what they can and can't do. Right now, they just simply are used to playing a certain way. And we've seen a lot of players foul out, including JJ. Stewie had 5 against the Fire. There are a lot more players kind of touching that. Arike Ogunbowale had 3 in the second quarter against the Fever. And she was talking about how it's been a while since that has happened to her. She only had 3 games of 5 fouls total last year.
This isn't new, right? Like, we heard this in the college game. We heard SEC players and coaches talking about how it's kind of a staggering adjustment into the NCAA tournament, because maybe SEC officials let things go far more than they do in the tournament. And then it's like a shock whenever you're doing something that you always do, and then all of a sudden a whistle gets blown. I also think this is just inherently human. Like, you don't snap your fingers and all of a sudden officiating is perfect exactly how you want it. You don't go from an overly physical game to a less physical game without at least a little bit of a feeling out period. And look, the league is better when your superstars are out there and they're healthy. An overly physical style of game just increases the risk of injury. Now, being trying to be less physical doesn't eliminate injury. It's sports. It's physical. It's going to, like, injuries are going to happen. They're an unfortunate but inevitable part of the game. But I didn't want to see a WNBA postseason where Stewie and Sabrina were banged up, where Nafisa Collier was banged up, where Caitlin Clark and so many members of the Indiana Fever were banged up. So, look, this is better for the game long term. I think we all just have to be a little bit patient. I think we all just have to understand that there's going to be an adjustment period here. To your point, hoping the adjustment period doesn't last the entirety of the season and 55 fouls called in a game is the new norm. I think that this is just what we're all going to have to live through to make the game ultimately better in the long run.
Yeah, small sample size too. Like, yes. I wrote a story on this Monday. There's only there were 11 games to go over. Like, we love to overreact to that kind of stuff. And we should have this conversation, but like, let's wait it out and see like next week if it looks a little different.
Yeah. Just a small incremental progress week over week. Because we've got some great games coming up on the slate tonight. Today is Wednesday, the time that we're recording this podcast. So tonight we get Indiana on the road at the LA Sparks. Cass, based off of just a one-game sample size that we've seen from both of these teams that feel like they're allergic to defense, I expect the final score to be 150 to 149.
I was going to say, first one to 105 wins again.
Yeah, right. And maybe not even that will be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's like first one to 105 in the third quarter.
In the third quarter.
I want to see a little bit of defense from either of these teams. I think that'll go a long way in this matchup. But if you're on the East Coast, I think it's a 10:30 tip. So maybe the offense will keep you awake.
Coffee and offense, two things I can keep a girl up all night long. We got great games on Sunday, too. Vegas and Atlanta, you know, the reigning champion Las Vegas Aces, a powerhouse, a juggernaut, taking on an Atlanta team that's trying to get to the promised land, a team whose defense looks much improved with Angel Reese. And we also have Seattle Storm in Indiana, but dare I say it's Flage and Caitlin. So I'm excited to see that matchup as well.
Yes, two very good ones. For Atlanta, you want to win that game. You want to compete at the top. That's what you need to do early.
Yep, no doubt. We've got great games coming down the pipe. So we'll have our reactions to the biggest moments in these games and the latest news in the league coming up on next week's edition, rather, of the podcast. Of course, you can find that on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. And if you're watching there, hi, thank you for being here. Feel free to leave a comment down below if you disagree with us, if you have any reactions, overreactions to the first week of action, you know, questions, comments, concerns, all of those things, feel free to leave those down below. But you can also listen to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. She's Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. We'll see you next week on Hoops 360.